Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, your host, Evan Sider, and I'm joined by my co-host, Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. Also, make sure to follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support over there is very much appreciated. I know our followers keep going up over there every day, but we have a very special guest for today. We had Jeff Siegel on of Early Bird Rights earlier in the offseason around draft time, but Jeff, you're back again today, and we gave a lot of our thoughts last night in our immediate recap episode, but I'll give you the floor right now. What was your immediate thoughts from last night's Suns-Mavs game?
I thought it was really interesting to see how everybody sort of fit together, how Booker was going to fit with DeAndre Ayton, how Ariza and Anderson were going to come together, and how Isaiah Cannon can step in and play that starting point guard role that we sort of had expected was going to go to Shaq Harrison. And obviously that's not going to happen anytime soon. So, you know, there were a lot of interesting pieces for Phoenix. Obviously, there's the whole other side of Dallas with Doncic and DeAndre Jordan and some of their new pieces. But from a Phoenix perspective, I thought that this was a great performance from the Suns. It was sort of, we were just talking, you know, just before we hit record, that this was sort of maybe the 75th, 80th percentile of what we would have expected from Phoenix. You know, they really hit most of what you would really want to see from them even later on in the season, where, you know, Trevor Ariza was providing the 3-and-D stuff. DeAndre Ayton didn't really look like a rookie. Like, he really, you know, stood out as one of the better, especially offensive players. Devin Booker, whatever was going on with his hand is clearly not affecting how he plays on the floor, you know, because he was phenomenal offensively. And so, you know, I thought, and Kokoschkov's new system is gelling really well. Obviously, they were sharing the ball very well. 35 assists on 44 made baskets is pretty much as good as it's going to get for any team, much less a team that sort of, you know, had struggled with that in the past with a guy like Booker, who is more of an isolation scorer. A guy like TJ Warren is more of an isolation guy. You know, just getting the ball moving from side to side was great to see. So, you know, really top to bottom offensively, I think Phoenix really stood out and hit every goal that you could have really imagined for them in the first game of the season.
Yeah, one thing I was looking at going into the game, I mean, maybe just because it was obviously the hyped, like, number one pick, number three pick thing on opening night, national TV. But I thought there were a lot more interesting just individual matchups going on in the game between the Suns obviously going out and getting Ariza and having him match up on Doncic right away, and DeAndre Jordan against DeAndre Ayton. What matchups stood out to you, whether they went in either team's direction? But I thought that ended up being kind of a key to the game, especially late when you see what Booker's able to do, just kind of tearing Wes Matthews apart.
Yeah, it's something that we had sort of thought we might see from Wes Matthews as he sort of ages and you know, he tore the Achilles a few years ago and he came back really quickly from that. I remember and was sort of back to where he, you know, where we thought he might be, but then things have not gone Matthews' way over the last, you know, at least last year and obviously in the first game this year. Things have been sort of not, you know, not perfect for him from a lateral quickness perspective. He hasn't been quite the same level of defender that we saw in Portland. You know, I think Booker was able to take advantage of that later on. The Ayton-Jordan matchup, I thought, was the most important of all of the matchups. I think Ayton did a fantastic job, especially for a rookie, with a guy who, you know, has been one of the better defensive centers in the league. Perhaps Jordan has sort of lost a step. I think that, you know, if we're just looking at this one game, and obviously it's just a one game sample, I think Dallas is going to be happy that they only have DeAndre on a 1-year contract, and that next year they can sort of assess their options and come back and look at his play over the course of the year and sort of maybe push him to take a little bit less money or not even re-sign him at all next summer. It seems unfathomable considering how much they've sort of tried to push to sign him over the last few years, but he was not the DeAndre Jordan that we remember. Maybe he was just sort of uncomfortable in the Mavs system. You could see him sort of out of position both offensively and defensively, where he would catch the ball, say, like at the top of the key, and sort of expect to just turn and hand the ball off. And the other Dallas Mavericks are not used to the big man just having to do that. Usually the bigs for Dallas are a little bit more skilled. A guy like, you know, Dirk Nowitzki, Maxi Kleber, you know, these guys who, if they catch the ball at the top of the key are open, they can shoot. And so it's just going to take a little bit of time for Dallas to sort of mesh with DeAndre's skills, I think. and I think Ayton was, like we were saying, he was very good offensively in this game. 8 for 11, 10 boards, 6 assists, was really involved in all sorts of stuff from the elbow, mid post, was getting in on the offensive glass a little bit. Like he was everything that you would want a number one pick with his profile to be. Defensively was, I think, got mixed reviews. I saw some people thought that he was fine for a rookie. I thought he was not very good at all. So you can't expect him to be good in the first game, considering where he came from and how he has never been particularly good defensively. So, it's not a big deal, but that was something to watch for with him on the defensive end.
Yeah. Really quick before we go to you, Evan, sorry. I just have to get it out somewhere because I wrote about Luka for FanSided last night and was in the Mavs locker room after the game. And DeAndre was understandably grumpy, like you said, didn't have an incredible game by his standards, and a long way to go as far as getting acclimated. But the outfit that he threw on while we were waiting to talk to him, he had a flamingo, like a black shawl / kimono thing with flamingos all over it, and a cowboy hat and boots. And he just threw it on and then turned around and no one addressed it. And I felt like somebody had to and nobody did. But not a great performance on the court, but an amazing performance in the locker room for him.
Yeah, I mean, DeAndre Jordan has had a little flash as far as he's seen a commercial Blaker from before. So he's kind of a funny guy. But Jeff, really quickly on Devin Booker, I might as well ask generally about him. 35 points, 17 in the last 5 minutes of the game, 14 straight at one point. You can tell early on, obviously, that Booker and Igor's system he's getting the easiest shots he's seen the past 3 years. And one thing I had told Brendan about last night at the game was how he hit really over the past few years, Booker hasn't done this, but last night took 10 3-point attempts. And if that evolution continues, I think that Booker could really be one of the higher scoring guards in this league, because you saw it last night with all the weapons he now has around him, with DeAndre Ayton spacing, the gravity he creates, Trevor Ariza, Ryan Anderson, Josh Jackson, even TJ Warren, if they're hitting their shots. This is by far the most talent Booker's had around. So do you think it might be a breakout year for him this year as far as national exposure goes?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that's an interesting sort of thing to think about, because he's so, I mean, at least in my view, he's already sort of broken out. Like, he's part of the Team USA setup. It's not necessarily like on the final team, but he's always working out with those guys. You see him in the Vegas workouts all the time. He's, one of the best scorers in the league already before having all of this sort of spacing and offensive system around him. So, in terms of breaking out in the national conversation, I feel, maybe he can elevate that even further, but he's already, at least to me, he's already in that upper echelon, one of the five best scoring players, just, guard, big, no matter what. Like, he's one of the best five scorers in the league already. And so it's, if he can raised his profile in this sort of 35 points on 19 shots and taking over the end of the fourth quarter, if that becomes a regular thing that we're seeing once a week, once every 2 weeks, and it's happening consistently and the Suns are winning those games, yeah, I mean, I guess he's going to get elevated into, perhaps into the All-Star and All-NBA conversations. That's possible. I mean, it seems unlikely that we're going to take one game and extrapolate that over the whole season, but it's certainly possible that you can see some of the systemic advantages that he has this year that he didn't have in previous years.
Yeah, I guess one last thing for me on this game, which is one we didn't actually hit on, Evan, last night too much, after it's the main focus of the rotation discussion all summer long, was Booker at point guard. And they didn't have a ton of success until the very end. And at that point, it really wasn't a byproduct of necessarily Booker playing point guard. He just was hitting incredible tough shots, but they went to it a couple times at the end of each half. And I don't know. I mean, what did you guys, from either one of you guys, did you see any noticeable differences there? They were leaving Josh Jackson completely open at the end of the game once Booker started to get hot, and then he made them pay and really cemented the win with two corner threes. But I mean, what did we see last night? Did it open anything up? Like, was that actually much of a difference? To me, it kind of felt like Kanan's floor spacing was good enough that I didn't really notice like a humongous difference in the way the offense worked with Booker at point guard. And it will obviously happen going forward. We know that's going to be their best look. But in the one game, kind of what were you guys' takeaways from those lineups?
For me personally, I think it was just a lot more the ball is in his hand delay. Obviously, Igor Kokoschka wants him to have the ball in crunch time. And the best way to do that is have Booker have the ball in his hands as much as possible. And doing that point guard, I think, makes a lot of sense. But like you mentioned there, Brent, I do think it wasn't as noticeable. If Josh Jackson was missing those threes, it would have been a bigger talking point, I think. But I think just more at the athletic package that it offers, the switching capabilities on defense, if you have Booker at the one, maybe camping on their worst defender, then have Jackson out there instead of a guy like Cannon, I think it makes a lot of sense defensively as well. And you can have Trevor Ariza backing them up for insurance purposes on the wing and an anchor in the defense. But I kind of like the closing lineup a lot. And then eventually, maybe down the line, once Mikal Bridges gets in the rotation, maybe he takes Ryan Anderson's spot. But I really like what I saw last night from the closing group. And obviously, Booker shouldn't be playing a lot of point guard, but closing situation, I definitely like it.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting to see Booker take that responsibility on. I mean, we sort of had expected that he would take the primary ball handler role away from a guy like Cannon, but not even having Cannon on the floor to play defense in those situations and going with, Jackson and Booker and Ariza sort of as the perimeter threats. You know, I think that defensively has some upside that Cannon can't provide because he's just not that level of on-ball defender at the point guard position. And if Josh Jackson can do that, if he can really step in and take on that role as an on-ball defender for point guards, that's going to be really big for them because we know Booker is not going to be able to do that. Ariza at his age is just not really in that spot anymore. So if Jackson can do that, I think that was the one question I had when they decided to go with a guy like Isaiah Cannon over Shaq Harrison. How is that going to work defensively at the point guard spot? I think Harrison is a lot, just a ton better than Cannon is, but doesn't provide any of the offensive talent that Cannon does. Can't really shoot, can drive, but can't finish. Like, he's somebody that you don't have to guard at all. And if you're going to have him and Jackson out there at the end of games, the Harrison-Jackson combo wouldn't have worked offensively, and you would have seen just a lot more attention paid to a guy like Devin Booker or to DeAndre Ayton when he gets the ball on the block. So, if Jackson can keep that up, if he can keep up that defensive work at the point guard spot, then I think that's going to be a solid closing lineup for them.
Before we go to our next segment, I wanted to tell our listeners about our promotionals that we're doing, and it's about if you want to be a part of our Locked On Network as far as being a sponsor for Locked On Suns, we're definitely open to that. Our demographic is 98% males, more education, more than traditional media audiences on podcasts as well. So if you want to sponsor us or Locked On Network, please email me at eastsider@gmail.com, or you can just email the Locked On Network as well. You can follow, really, like we said at the beginning of the show, Brennan at BrennanClean14. I'm at eastsidery. Also, the Locked On page at Locked On PHX Suns. If you're a local business who wants to partner with us, we're definitely open to that. So please, if you are in need of having a local business partner, we're definitely open to that. So let us know, and we're definitely open. So before we go any further, Jeff, I wanted to ask generally about Ryan McDonough, because I found that firing still a little puzzling today, especially after last night's performance. But why do you think Ryan McDonough, from your point of view, got fired?
I mean, it's tough to say that it was just like the dysfunction of the Phoenix Suns organization and just how Robert Sarver has chosen to make decisions over the last few years. It seems there was no reason to fire him at this point in the season. I mean, just right before the season, with so few decisions left to be made before the season started, with just the last few cuts and a possible trade with Devon Reed. But like, what did he do this summer that Sarver would have wanted him to do better? You got Devin Booker to sign up for the long-term extension. You hired who might be one of the best coaches on the market in Kokoschkov. Budenholzer was on the market, but was not really considering Phoenix. I don't think Dwayne Casey, again, you're not going to get one of the high end coaches. So you got Kokoschkov, who fits the system really well. They got DeAndre Ayton with the number one pick. Like, what was the goal that Ryan McDonough didn't succeed in? Like, what was his? So it just, I don't know. It screamed Sarver was just sort of off his rocker again. I don't know that that's something that is true. I don't know. I wasn't, you know, in the room when he made that decision. I don't know whether there was a personal issue where McDonough just, you know, didn't get along with Sarver at the end there, but it seemed very curious from the outside for sure.
Brendan, what do you think about just, I think we're up almost 2 weeks at this point from McDonough being fired long-term now. What do you think just after that happened and after seeing the first game, especially with how these guys performed?
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to be excited about what he put together. And the one thing I've been trying to focus on, like since the move happened, I think I mentioned it the day after, is just we see the move from the guy who built the team to the guy who kind of takes it to the next spot a lot around the league. That's not necessarily uncommon. We saw it in Philly. We see it a lot of the time, but it's just, I mean, it is the timing, and like we can keep harping on it. It doesn't make sense, and I don't know if it ever will make sense. There's really no reason why that day specifically, why that far into the offseason, that kind of a deal had to be made. And the real thing that I look at more even than what happened last night, because I think we could have expected quite a bit of what happened last night outside of some outlier assist and three-point shooting numbers, is just what's happened since, which is still no trade for a point guard, which was the easy thing to point to when McDonough got fired as far as like the one missing piece to the offseason that didn't quite go the Suns' way. And we still haven't had a point guard trade, right? And not only that, but we now have Jamal Crawford in Phoenix to apparently try to plug that hole. And that makes really no sense at all if the goal is to add some, you know, playmaking. And just, it's not the craziest move ever. Like we said, we don't know what his role will be, but it definitely is not the kind of high caliber flip you would have hoped for when you fire the guy who apparently couldn't get that done for you.
Yeah, it just screams dysfunction to me still a few weeks later. But Brendan, what else do you have as far as general overall thoughts from really not the NBA, so to say, but what do you think as far as what's been going on with the Suns and how they stack up as far as entertainment value from last night? I mean, it's kind of a moot point, but I feel like that game last night was pretty entertaining, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it's been cool to see that. Like, I was excited, but I'm so pessimistic about the Suns just actually progressing, because we've seen them stagnate individuals and as a team because of just the craziness that's gone on for so long here. Outside of Devin Booker, it really has felt a lot of the time like it's tough to find like an area of hope for the team. But I mean, the fact that like guys like Jeff and elsewhere around the league are excited about what happened last night was cool. The arena was obviously rocking, so you can tell it's happening here too. But Jeff, I just wanted to throw it back to you to ask, like, just from a roster standpoint, from where they've gone since getting Booker to sign that extension, drafting DeAndre Ayton, those were kind of two of the no-brainers of the offseason. Obviously, the McDonough thing's confusing, but besides that, like, how do you feel about the way that they've gone about kind of taking the next step once you have the young core and trying to solidify more of a winning roster?
I mean, the Ariza signing will, you know, we'll see how that goes. I still feel like there's a chance, I wouldn't put it above 50%, but there's a 30% chance that he's not on this team come February, you know, that they, you know, find themselves so far out of it and he's only on a 1 year contract that they either move him or buy him out and he can go to, you know, to a contender where he can really help them win, like we saw from him in previous years. You know, the you know, acquiring Ryan Anderson was fine. I think that was a good trade for them in terms of, you know, where they want to go, how they want to play offensively. He sort of fits that mold without needing to play in, you know, all the crunch time, you know, all the crunch time minutes. He doesn't have to be out there for all of that, but can provide some good spacing, some good leadership. Just having a veteran presence around for the young guys is a good thing. I think Anderson can bring that to the table. You know, and so those were the sort of big acquisitions. You know, I thought the Bridges trade was interesting in that, you know, if he, you know, sort of, if he breaks out to be the guy that, you know, you would hope that he could be, given his career at Villanova as a 3-and-D kind of wing. You know, we didn't see any of him last night. Will we see him, you know, going forward, or is he more of a long-term project where we may not really see him play significant minutes until, you know, January, February? That wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't make it necessary. I wouldn't say if he doesn't play too much between now and mid-November, that's not a reason to panic by any means. Rookies, they can afford to bring him along slowly. They have a bunch of other wings. There's really no reason to throw him in the fire unless you have to, and if he's ready for it. So if they judge that he's not ready for it, and it becomes December, January before he's getting, you know, even spot minutes here and there, that's, I wouldn't worry too much about that. But, you know, from a roster composition standpoint, you know, you touched on the point guard situation and how they didn't end up, you know, trading for or acquiring a high level point guard. That's really the only area that you can say that McDonough probably had some prerogative to get that done and just wasn't able to, whether he just decided not to or just couldn't get a trade that made sense for them. You know, that's, you know, they know that better than we do on the outside, of course, but you know, it's hard to know exactly what kind of point guard that they would have wanted to trade for. A guy who doesn't necessarily need the ball, can space the floor, can defend the point guard position. You kind of want a 3-and-D point guard who can basically defend ones and then space the floor for Booker and Ayton and the rest of these guys offensively. So like we talked about with this game, if that's Josh Jackson, if he's the guy who can defend ones and space the floor, and then, you know, cut and play in transition and do all the other stuff that Josh Jackson does, that's sort of what you're looking for. And maybe Cannon sort of gets the start at the point guard spot. But when it comes to closing time, like it did last night, Jackson is the guy who basically plays point guard, quote unquote, when you're coming down the stretch in these close games.
I think that's definitely the hope. And we saw that in preseason where Jackson's playmaking, when the Suns were at their best in the preseason, it was because Jackson was racking up assists, actually already has pretty great chemistry with DeAndre Ayton. And we didn't even really see that come out too much last night. Everybody had a handful of assists because the ball was moving so well. But I think that there's more to be explored there. And I think that Booker performing so well in those situations definitely means that I think Kokoschkov will be more confident and comfortable going to those lineups more, maybe outside of just the very end of the halves. And I hope we see it more, because I think that is the eventual answer. Even if they were to get a point guard this year, I think that's probably for who's currently on the roster, assuming that no massive trade were to happen, that's the best version of this team.
Yeah. I still lean towards them making a trade sometime between December and February, probably not like a big scale trade, like a Kemba Walker. I think they're probably just going to save their assets for the summer, see what happens. But maybe someone like a Trey Burke or someone that's out of the rotation somewhere around the league. Maybe TJ McConnell makes a lot more sense in February. I know the Suns were declined a trade off for them with a second round pick, which doesn't surprise from Philly's point of view. But anything else you want to cover as far as general Suns thoughts, Brennan?
No, I don't think so.
All right, let's go straight into, I guess, with general NBA discussion. And before we do that, I wanted to tell everyone about our Locked On NBA Twitter at Locked On NBA Net. It's a place where you can follow all of our Locked On hosts and our Locked On websites, because that's really where you can find all of our live feeds. If you can follow me during the Suns games, Brendan during the Suns games, guys like Nick Engstead last night for the Mavericks game, if you were following along with their coverage, they have a really good podcast over there. Also, make sure to go check out Locked On Nuggets as well. I mean, we play them on Saturday, so make sure you go out and check their podcast out. You can find all that out at Locked On NBA Net on Twitter. So go over there and follow them.
But yeah, and yeah, before we actually move on, I want to tell you guys as well about Blue Chew. Guys, remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up, BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. The difference between BlueChew.com and other FDA-approved pills such as Viagra and Cialis is that it's chewable, like the name of the website, right? So you can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill. So you can be ready whenever the opportunity arises. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package. So you're not going to have any in-person doctor's visits to deal with, the hassle of that, no waiting in the pharmacy, taking time out of your day, and best of all, no more awkwardness with any of it. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're even cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON, like it always is. All one word, name of this show. Just go ahead and pay $5 shipping, and everything else is taken care of for your first order. Again, that's bluechew.com, B-L-U-E, like the color, to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. All right, guys, let's maybe just do one takeaway from other games around the league before we get out of here. You want to go first, Evan?
Yeah, sure. And this probably shouldn't surprise anyone here, but Indiana Pacers really impressed me last night. They really had their way at the Memphis Grizzlies. They won. They were up by 20-plus throughout the entire game. Victor Oladipo looked great. Miles Turner looked good. The spacing looks really good with adding guys in like Tyreek and Doug McDermott. So
I think you were the only guy watching that game.
Yeah.
I think it was you, and then the announcers probably were just calling you by name as they made points about the game.
To be honest, it won't surprise me. I was probably the only one that was on the RMBA streams looking for Pacers games. But Jeff, what was your biggest takeaway from any games in the past two nights?
I thought the Pelicans were my big takeaway, especially offensively, the way that they were able to punish Houston's switching scheme and the way we've seen so many teams around the league go to Houston's switch everything defensive strategy or switch a lot of things defensive strategy. The Pelicans are uniquely poised to break that stuff down. We see a lot of guards get the ball against big guys and then go into their bag with lots of dribble moves and then try to pull up for a jumper or get past them to the basket. And that's fine, but I would imagine that the efficiency on a big guy, Anthony Davis, Julius Randle, getting in the lane and just going through a smaller guy like Chris Paul, James Harden even, who is usually a very strong post defender, you know, he's no match for those guys, especially a guy like Randle, who is just immensely strong and is able to really go through guys at his own position, much less, you know, point guards and shooting guards like that. So the way the Pelicans, you know, Indiana, I thought was very good. Memphis didn't look fantastic. I think, and we don't expect that Memphis is going to be a good team. I didn't expect that Indiana would blow them out like they did, but Indiana is a significantly better team than Memphis. Whereas New Orleans, you know, that was supposed to be a Houston win or a close game, and New Orleans just blew the doors off of them, really, and was, you know, they were very, very good in the competitive portion of that game and really, you know, took it to them offensively. I thought it might be an interesting precedent to see how the Pelicans deal with Houston throughout the year, how the Pelicans deal with, you know, heavy switching defenses throughout the year.
Yeah, that was actually the game that I went back to this morning too, just to see that how quickly their bigs were making decisions at the minute. I mean, they were sending help to Anthony Davis and he was picking out cutters. That's not even like a real common part of his game that we've seen. So it wasn't even Randle alone, although I think he opened up a lot for them, but just to see Davis get off to that kind of start too was pretty awesome. They were playing just as fast as they were at the end of last year. Alfred Payton had some struggles, but all in all, I think he fit in pretty well last night. So I think they were maybe tailor-made to kind of compete against the switching team the way that they constructed their roster this summer. So I'm interested to see if they can continue to have those advantages when they're playing against more traditional defense, although maybe that's even tough to find at this point too, and that'll just be a strength for them. But I'll go back one night before for mine just because you kind of took it. But I will go with Dennis Schroeder in Oklahoma City. Obviously not an efficient night. That's kind of the status quo for him. But I felt like watching that game, it surprised me to a certain degree how that roster, the way that team plays, just grinding out games, playing ugly, getting offensive rebounds, fit his style well in a way that actually makes me feel okay about him. Obviously, if he's shooting that poorly every night, it's not going to be a good thing, but they only lost by 8 without two of their better players, obviously their best player, and then Robertson as well. So I just that impressed me to see him go and play on a good team and not drag them down. And it wasn't like they were balling out. They shot 36%, and it was really just their normal style that kind of overcame the Warriors. And I just think that's something to monitor going forward and seeing how he goes into a winning situation and continues to help them rather than hurt them.
Definitely. And that really, I'm just glad the NBA basketball is back. We had so long of just waiting around with nothing for the past few weeks. And then,
yeah, a lot of fun games the last couple of nights.
Definitely. And it's a really fun change of pace from I've been watching a lot of NFL. So getting the NBA back in my life is pretty nice, but that'll be it for today's episode, guys. Appreciate you listening. We'll be back with you guys tomorrow.